Hello, and welcome to the LuzoCast, episode number. Hey, don't laugh at me. I'm trying to put on my like radio voice. Episode number 64.
Oh, I really thought you were going to say
69. Oh, you got it right.
Well,
you got it
you know, right. As we get closer, we're only 5 episodes away. I'm going to do it correctly so that you know people when 69 hits, it's more of an impact.
I'm surprised you don't do like LuzoCast number 69 minus 5. Like an arithmetic.
Oh, don't give him any ideas.
No. It's from here on out, for the next 5 weeks, I'm going to try and keep it normal and let you guys bring it up, as you, I'm sure you will, by yourselves, because now I'm in your heads with the whole 69 thing. So there we go. As always, I am your host, Krishna, and this is Luzo Productions, and I'm joined by 3 other people. Thanks for joining me, guys, you know, really helping me out here with my podcast. I'm just kidding. This is Luzo Productions.
I'm not going to participate.
And this is the Luzo
I will not be.
Wait, what? Did he just?
I just hijacked the entire
completely
podcast.
Took our names away.
This
we don't exist.
No, I'm kidding. I'm joined by Arjuna sitting across the table from me here in LA. And just like last week, half the team.
Our Japanese correspondents.
Exactly. Our foreign press. No, half the team, Ravi and Sarah, are still in Japan for only a couple more. Actually, no. Aren't you flying back right now?
Yeah.
Are you on the plane?
They're on the plane right now.
Yeah. We're on the plane, yeah. We figured out how to get a signal.
How did you get everyone around you to be so quiet in the plane engines? I can't hear anything. It's wonderful.
We're using
iCast Muffliato.
You got that Gundam technology, nope. Probably, you know, like the atmosphere
Gundam!
Dampers and stuff.
Giant unicorn Gundam.
Let's just start right there, actually. You've been in Japan, and I've seen a lot of your Instagram and your pictures, and it has been very sort of giant robot related. So what's going on with that?
So yesterday, actually, we were down in an area called Diver City, Tokyo.
In Odaiba.
Okay.
I would like to point out real quick, just the title or the name of this area, Diver City, reminds me of Pokemon.
Yes, I can see that. It's kind of like saffron or cinnamon or whatever.
And speaking of Pokemons and
I wish I had the Pokemon song with us right now.
One of the buildings you said was from Digimon, right?
Oh, yeah. There was actually a building out there that they used in the Digimon movie.
The apartment building, right?
The apartment building, yeah. Which is really cool that they're, you know, obviously we've been watching anime our entire lives, but it's really cool to kind of see some of these places that are depicted in these shows in person.
Nice.
I'm sure it's how people feel when they come to LA and see like iconic places and so forth. But yeah, we were down in Diver City because on last Sunday, I think it was September 24th or 25th.
Mm-hmm, 24th.
The Gundam people, yeah, let's call them the Gundam people, released their newest statue, the Unicorn Gundam, which replaces the official Mobile Suit Gundam that had been standing in that same location since 2012. They took that down March of 2017, and they started plans for the Unicorn Gundam, which they officially opened up last week. So we got to actually take our picture, see the giant Gundam, drool a little bit on the Gundam.
Did you get to go inside the Gundam and fly it?
Sadly, no. They haven't figured that part out
yet. Well, that's just mean.
But does happen every hour at the beginning of each hour, the Unicorn Gundam goes from its kind of non-battle mode to its battle mode, where the armor kind of pops up and you can actually see the lights under the armor. The on the head, it actually changes, and the visor thing kind of opens up and glows, and they have really intense music playing. It's actually really cool. We unfortunately never got it on video because
get a little bit of it.
Oh, okay. Well, every time it would happen, I was just kind of awestruck because, you know, a life-size Gundam in front of you is actually moving,
which is
amazing.
You could make the argument it transformed.
Yes, you could actually.
Oh, God.
Funny story, many people don't realize this, but Transformers did also originate in Japan.
It did?
So, yeah,
it did. Yeah,
that's not surprising, but I'm still surprised. Interesting.
Also, this giant Gundam is in front of the Diver City Tokyo Mall, and in that mall, on the top floor, is one of the largest Gundam stores ever.
It's called Gundam Base, actually.
Called Gundam Base.
Kind of nice.
I may have something for the two of you.
Maybe. A life-size Gundam?
Yes, we're going to attach it to the top of the plane.
I got you the information pamphlet from the mall.
I love information pamphlets.
It's got a picture of the life-size unicorn.
You can
Gundam.
Have mine.
Wow, you're going to use it as toilet paper, then leave it in your bedroom and not tell you where it is, and you're going to smell something and you're never going to find
okay.
it.
Okay.
Wow.
Right, ew.
That was really.
That was that one.
Like,
yeah.
Here's the thing, though. I did this a year ago for Krishner, and he's neither found it nor smelled it.
Wow.
Well, I mean.
Shoot. Well, that's not
we've
good.
We've seen his room, so.
Yeah, not surprising. Not surprising on either account. Well, that's cool. So that's very interesting. So. Actually, quick question for you guys: Are they gonna come out with any kind of Gundam virtual reality game anytime soon? Because I would imagine that would be pretty cool.
So they don't have like a full fledged virtual reality game, like an official one. But yeah, that would be awesome, especially if you could just be a Gundam.
Yeah,
like, actually, a Gundam, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
And
it makes so much sense for a virtual reality experience if you think about it, So
what they do have down actually in an area called Shinjuku, they have a store called VR Portal. So they actually have like VR,
there are
like
a few of them,
like arcades. They have
sweet.
Like VR arcades here, which are like very fully interactive. They have Vive headsets, similar to what we have. They also have like the PlayStation headsets. At this particular VR Portal, and we're actually going to try and see if we can go today.
How can you do that? You're flying.
I mean, we're gonna go in the past.
We were going to go yesterday.
Right, they're time travelers.
Yeah,
we're time lords. Okay.
Yeah,
but at this
confusing.
VR portal, they have a Gundam experience where you put on a Vive headset and you actually sit in a giant life-sized Gundam hand.
Oh shoot!
And with the headset on, you are basically you're in a Gundam's carrying you through a battle, basically.
Holy crap!
So if we're able to do that, definitely check loserproductions.com for video of me screaming like a little girl.
Yeah, that would be very entertaining. That would be great. Cool. Cool, cool. So, yeah, any other Japan stuff you want to drop our way?
We also, in the same area, we ran across the Odaiba Oktoberfest.
Oh, yeah.
Which happened to be starting yesterday. So we hung out in the area long enough to do that because then we could stay and see the giant Gundam at night with all the lights and everything. So it started out with us just intending to have, like one beer
of
each.
Course. Of
and
course.
It turned into two, and then it turned into three. We made some friends.
Yeah. Nice.
I danced with a bunch of people in a train, like throughout the area, while an Austrian band played up at the front. It was really highly entertaining.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, there you go, Oktoberfest in Japan.
It's pretty amazing.
Not many people can say they've done that, I would imagine. So there you go.
The people that were there did.
You're sure you did?
I'm cool.
You're lying.
Mm-hmm.
I'm real cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
I see on here, so this all comes into sort of our Hollywood story section. I see a second one here called Stronger. I have no idea who wrote that.
Yeah, actually, so I wrote this, and it actually...
You?
It's a brief mention, and then it actually links to a section we have lower that was recently added, and we were having a war of words on. But anyway, on Friday, I went to, with Evelyn, go see a movie called Stronger, which is... About the, it's not about the Boston Marathon bombing. It's about Jake Bowman, one of the guys who was right at the center of the marathon bombing and lost both of his legs.
Hmm.
And it's just a really well done movie with Jake Gyllenhaal that I thought is someone, I was at UNH, the University of New Hampshire, at school at that time. I know Krishna, you worked in the Boston area around that time, so I just thought it was. It was a timely movie to kind of bring up as we kind of lived those events a little bit. So I saw the movie, great movie, recommend seeing it. But when I was seeing that movie, I saw a bunch of movie trailers. And one of the trailers I saw was this trailer called Current War. Which is which is a movie that pits the like three masterminds of electricity back in the day and their war for the current.
So which masters of electricity are
it
we talking
is,
about?
It is Thomas Edison. It is. I want to say David Bowie because when I think Nikola Tesla, I think David Bowie
from the Prestige. Yeah,
But it's not
his best role ever.
Yeah,
ever.
Easily.
But it's
except
Nikola
except
Tesla.
When David Bowie was in his more recent videos, Black Star.
Oh yeah, that's.
Oh, actually, fun better. Fact: Blade Runner 2049 is coming out this week, and the antagonist of the movie is played by Jared Leto. The director and the executive producer, Ridley Scott, have said the original guy they wanted for that role was David Bowie, but nice. He passed away, unfortunately. So then they wanted someone that was eccentric as well, and they said that led them to Jared Leto.
Yep, which makes sense.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. Is that after they saw him as the Joker or before?
It would have been after.
I guess.
Yeah. Well, maybe. Actually, maybe not.
It might have been close.
Yeah.
It might not
or
have
they
been.
Never, or twist. They never saw him as the Joker.
Shoot. Well,
they're
that's
like, wait,
not.
You're the Joker?
And now they regret it.
That's just not good.
But anyway,
casting.
So this current war, it has Benedict Cumberbatch, I think, as Thomas Edison. I forget who played the other two. I recognize them. I don't remember their names off the top of my head. But it's just like watching the trailer, it was this very like glammed up, almost Guy Ritchie-esque Hollywood stylized electricity war where they're just saying like these cheesy one-liners like whoever controls the current controls the world.
Oh wait,
I'm looking now to see who it is. Tom Holland is in it?
Oh, that's weird.
Is Tom Holland Nikola Tesla?
No. He's too young.
No, Nikola Tesla is somebody named Nicholas Holt, and I don't
recognize.
Yes,
that's the actor Holt. That plays Beast.
The Beast, yeah.
Oh, you're right. From, yeah. Okay, you're right, yeah.
Yeah.
And George Westinghouse is Michael Shannon?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Michael Shannon's General Zod from
Matthew
Superman.
McFadden's in it. Oh, I like him.
He's also
JP
in
Morgan.
The Guillermo del Toro film coming Gear. Out, The Way of Water, or Feeling of Water.
Oh, cool. Yeah, he's actually a good actor. What show was he in?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, they've got several good actors. It just seems that they've unfortunately fallen into this
Hollywood
odd,
thing.
Who knows? Maybe it's not horrible.
Yeah, I weirdly want to see it just because it's so preposterous. It's just like one of those movies. It's like, I just want to see what it's about.
You want to see?
Seriously.
I just want to listen
wreck.
To.
Exactly. It's a morbid part
I
of it.
I want to listen to Benedict Cumberbatch's terrible American accent.
There you go.
I
did not
really
hit
bad.
It. I did not.
I did not.
Oh, my God. Oh, well, thank you, Arjuna.
Actually, I have one more tangent now that we said Benedict Cumberbatch.
Oh, God.
There was. It was a foreign trailer that was released for Thor that came out a couple days ago. And
oh,
it actually
yeah. I
showed,
saw that on the. Theater
yeah.
in Tokyo here.
Yeah, it showed some scenes of Doctor Strange within the movie.
In Thor?
Yeah, because the after credit scene in Doctor Strange has Thor.
That's right.
So we knew he would be appearing, and he's in a couple scenes. It looks like he's still in New York, so it's not going to be a large sequence, but it's cool to still see him nonetheless.
Interesting. Well, there you go. That's kind of cool. I totally forgot about that scene in Doctor Strange, which was probably the best scene of the entire movie, to be honest.
It was the most memorable, because I really don't remember anything else of that movie.
I remember him play, you know, with his magic cape a
couple
of times.
Oh, yeah, the relationship with the cape.
Yeah, the cape was actually the best character in the movie.
Is this, I mean, as we're talking about the MCU and how clearly their movies connect pretty well.
Oh, actually, we can get to this, yeah.
We should talk about how terrible their television show connects.
So, I was doing some research on Inhumans, and I just want to start with this before I hand it off to everyone else. The showrunner for Inhumans is the same man who was involved with Iron Fist and Daredevil Season 2. Go.
That makes complete sense.
What?
I got nothing.
Wait, has it been canceled yet?
The bigger news here for the MCU, the TV specifically, as you know, a lot of people kind of pointed out a week or two ago. Instead, the marketing campaign for Inhumans has been, you know, the complete series as opposed to you know, the first season or whatever, which is everyone's speculating the show is kind of coming to an end. Variety actually did a little piece on ABC and the Marvel relationship over at Disney, I'm not sure if you guys read this article, but it had a lot of information about Inhumans, which we kind of already knew is this massive train wreck of a television show. What was more interesting in the article was that ABC has asked Disney and Marvel multiple times to end the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. show.
Yeah, that was my other point I was going to bring up.
Disney has repeatedly said no.
Yeah, they
you're going to continue doing this show even though it's hurting your ratings and ruining everything about you.
Correct. And then the other thing with Inhumans was the director that was brought in for the two IMAX episodes admitted recently he was brought in because of his ability to stretch a cheap budget.
Oh, geez.
So it sounds like to me, personally, that Disney is telling ABC to make these projects, and they're like...
Make them as bad as... No.
We don't care.
Yeah, that's so
bad. I would also like to point out, the article did say specifically, part of the reason Disney is so hot on keeping Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and so forth is because of its tie... It's limited, but still limited kind of tie-ins to the actual Marvel Cinematic Universe with the movie tie-ins, specifically within Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and then also kind of using it as a way to kind of continue marketing the movies as well.
And also, everyone knows the magic number in TV is 100 episodes, because that means you can get syndication rights if you're able to sell it to another network, and that's royalties for everyone involved on the show. So that's a nice penny for anybody.
Hmm.
Though I don't know if Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. will get syndication.
It shouldn't. I mean, that would be a travesty.
I'm sure the Sci-Fi Network will pick it up.
No. No.
Sci-Fi Network, where things go to die.
Yeah, seriously. Oh, God. Cool. I mean, we jumped ahead a little bit, but MCU, it's so interesting. I feel like you go back even just 5 years, and we're having a totally different conversation about the MCU.
It's showing a lot of cracks, which is interesting.
Yeah, and they've come fast and furiously.
The TV side is, I mean, we talked about the Defenders last week, the low ratings. Mm-hmm. The TV side really isn't doing well critically or commercially.
Yeah.
The movie side right now, we're building up to Infinity Wars. We obviously have Thor Ragnarok on the way, but...
But we've already talked about this. It's starting to feel a little bit... It's starting to feel stale on that side,
getting
too.
We're getting a lot. Though Spider-Man Homecoming was good.
I haven't seen it yet.
But it wasn't great. Yeah. You know, Guardians 2 was good, but it wasn't great.
And honestly, Thor looks like a fun ride, but let's be honest, it's going to be kind of the same thing
we're
used to.
Totally.
Right. I'm probably going to see it once and then never see it again in my lifetime.
Same. And that's how I felt about Doctor Strange.
Guardians 2, that's how I felt. Spider-Man Homecoming, I feel the same way as
just
well.
Just a little bit underwhelmed for the amount of hype all those movies have received, for sure. So, you know, it's fine. I think at this point, you just got to stop listening to that hype and, you know, just go see it once and wait for Infinity War, see that once, and move on, maybe. So, cool. Let's move on to a new show. It's a new show, but it's an old universe. How about that? Star Trek Discovery. Saw the first two episodes are out on CBS. They're live streaming?
They're available. They premiered on the CBS network, the first two episodes. And then the rest of the show will be premiering weekly on CBS All Access, CBS's streaming only service.
There we go.
Which has all the CBS programming, and this is their, I believe, first show that will just be available
on cable television.
Correct.
That's very interesting, because it's like my first initial impressions of it. It's a very polished show. It's very well done visually. It's actually one of the best, like, I guess, quote unquote network television shows that I've ever seen. I really enjoyed it, and unlike my three colleagues here, I am not too involved with the Star Trek universe. I've seen a couple episodes here and there from almost every single season or series, as you will. But Star Trek Discovery, you know, I figured I'd give it a shot, and I'm sucked in. I was really impressed by it. I thought it was. The first two episodes were very gripping. You know, it felt almost like a self-contained movie that was a lot that happened in those two episodes, and you took the main character, she ends up in a completely different place at the end of those two episodes. And what is it, 10, 12 episodes total? Eight?
I need to look it up exactly, but I know they're splitting it into this. This current batch goes for a few months, and there's like a little mid-season break, and there's another batch. That's the end of season one.
Yeah, and you know, I thought everything from the characterization, the acting, the visuals, I was just extremely impressed by it and enjoyed it thoroughly. So obviously, I'm coming from a slightly different place from you guys, but you know, as sort of like an outsider Trekkie person, I really enjoyed it, and I'm totally invested in the rest of the season.
It's a 15-episode first season that's going to be split into two chapters. The first finishes airing in November, and then the second chapter will begin in January. So they'll do like a general mid-season hiatus.
Cool.
That most
shows
do.
Yeah. So, yeah, somebody else, take it away. That was my fault.
Where do I start?
Start with the CGI.
CGI.
I would like to point out first that yes. We watched this together, and Robbie liked it, and I did too.
Cool.
Now,
he
sits and thinks about it and then finds things wrong with it because he likes to do that.
Ravi hears other people like it, and then he's like, I can't like it anymore.
There's that, too.
I can't. I'm sorry.
I cannot.
Well, that's fine.
So this is going to surprise you. The CGI was actually, I thought, pretty good. I was actually very happy with what I saw visually.
I'm shocked.
The only thing I would have hoped for, or I would have asked less for, would have been the lens flares.
That would have been cool. Influence.
It was
That would have been cool, but I can't. I'm a big enough person to kind of overlook that flaw.
Okay.
I'm okay with
really?
That.
Really?
That's interesting. I'm a big enough person. I love it.
We got to get it as a sound drop.
Yeah, I'm a big enough person to overlook
I'm gonna
that flaw.
I'm going to save that and then just like put it on a board and just like
play it every now and then. Yeah, I like it. Cool.
I'm going to mix it into a song like he does in Baby Driver.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Is he slow?
Oh,
is he slow?
God.
A lot of people have kind of, you know, said some interesting things on the internet, and I think we also talked about this as well in terms of what universe is this in. Is this in the Alpha timeline or the Alpha period or timeline, or is this the J.J. Abrams period? A lot of people are kind of going back and forth. Or is it one theory that I read, which is kind of I thought unique, is who's to say it's not its own completely different time period?
But we looked it up, and they said
the showrunners have hinted at, but nobody's kind of come out and said this is the Alpha, the Prime, and that's that. Because for one thing, the Klingons look radically different from what we've seen in the original Star Trek series, the Next Generation series, and then even the J.J. Abrams series. These Klingons look closer to that, but still aren't the same type of looking Klingons. Mm. The other kind of big thing that I think is interesting with this new series is that it kind of takes it's added new elements that have never been brought up before that are kind of significant. The biggest being that the main character was kind of adopted was adopted by Spock's father.
Sarek.
Sarek, which is kind of huge because Sarek does play important roles and
so
parts
does his son.
In various series, and,
never heard of his
and
son.
So does his son.
Yeah.
So and, you know,
he has a son.
You would think that you know if Sarek kind of adopted or took care of this girl, this human girl, and then you've got his own son who's half human. The fact that you know they would or would not interact seems kind of far fetched.
Right.
You've also got what was the other big one that kind of annoys me? Oh yeah, the whole start to the Klingon War. What the F word?
Oh, are you underwhelmed
by
frack?
It?
No, this is not how the Klingon War starts.
Oh, how does it start?
So it starts during the time of the during Kirk's original 5-year mission from the original series.
Yeah.
That's where the Klingon War kind of starts, and the Enterprise is kind of at fault for starting the Klingon War, not this.
Wait,
what was the ship's name?
Shenzhou.
Yeah.
Shinja.
Wait, Shinja. I have a quick question. Because Kirk, that whole thing, his their 5-year mission. Do we know chronologically if that takes place after this?
Ten years before.
So
that.
Is it possible then what we're seeing is not necessarily the start of the actual Klingon War, but maybe this sort of skirmish before?
Precursor.
They say that you've started a war with the Klingon.
But that doesn't really mean exactly. Like, what if it's like this little precursor thing that's relatively solved by the end of it, but perhaps then creates an environment, seeds, right, that would lead then to Kirk's
because
mess
technically
up or whatever.
They killed the leader. Spoiler alert.
What? That was the
what?
Leader?
I haven't seen the episode.
What? How are you talking about this?
I know the future. I somehow got the future elixir from Japan from them, and I was able to drink it and see the future myself.
Oh my god.
But anyway.
We have future elixir?
But yeah, well, but actually, to kind of backtrack on my own thought here, the leader that they killed was kind of...
A rebel?
He has no house.
Right.
Yeah, he wasn't a leader.
Yeah, he's just
leader,
kind of a fanatic almost,
yeah.
You could argue.
Right, but clearly now his death, like they were saying, because...
Has united them.
Yeah, he's a martyr.
He's a martyr, right. So it might take a while to get to that uniting. And I think...
Yeah, the albino Klingon's gonna...
I think he's clearly gonna play a big role in whatever the future holds. So I think it's... I think getting hooked into the facts about, you know, where it is in the timeline and this and that, there's clearly some rebooting going on a little bit. And they might explain that away with time travel, kind of like they did with the 2009 Star Trek movie by J.J. Abrams. Maybe they won't. I think getting, like, hooked into the hard continuity can be crippling.
You might have to...
It's so large, like, and it's so detailed that... Trying to live within those rules kind of locks creatively what you want to do.
I think the other thing too is because as a Trekkie fan, I totally understand why fans would be very invested in that kind of thing. But I feel like you might have to wait, and this is unfortunate, but you might have to wait until the end of the actual run of these 15 episodes
to see kind of where
because if they might have a really good reason for why it seems off, like, you know, what if it's a cover-up by the Federation, what if, you know, there's all kinds of ways, different things that they could do, and we haven't even met like the captain of
the Discovery
yet, and you know,
but remember that's an important part there, the
exactly.
Captain of Discovery, he is not kind of the main focus. The main focus is... Can somebody help me with her name? I can't pronounce it.
Michael?
Michael?
I just...
Her
name is Michael.
Michael.
In the show.
Hello, Michael.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was creepy. But,
Michael Burnham is her name.
What? No.
Yeah.
So...
Real quick, the last two points, I'll be quick here.
Sure, sure.
The last... You know, Star Trek as a series, they tried the kind of over... I think we talked about this last week, but, you know, they've tried... you know, having a main focus, an overarching focus to, you know, a season. Mm-hmm. Season 3 of the Star Trek Enterprise, which was considered the worst season of that failing show.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting that, you know, this war and this character, not even necessarily this character, but kind of what is happening with the Klingons and everything is kind of the main focus of this show. I think for a lot of people, you know, me included, it's kind of... I'm hoping that we still kind of get those classic sci-fi stories, those weird kind of one-off things here and there, hopefully. Mm. One can hope, because I think it would get kind of boring if the entire show is just going to be strictly war, battle.
I don't think it's necessarily about this war. The showrunners have come out and said this is... much more serialized than of any other previous Star Trek, where it really just was kind of like adventure of the week with a rough overarching theme, like you kind of said. But this, mm-hmm. They have a very set story they want to tell, at least with this first season, if not the whole show. And so we kind of know that there's a plan. The first two episodes was kind of known as, you know, they called themselves like a prologue. They wanted to set into motion your main characters, your main players, because a lot of the characters you saw on that bridge of the Shinzu are going to be on the Discovery. You know, at least Saru.
Doug Jones's
Saru character will be
on... Is that the science officer guy?
Yeah, who senses danger and death. will be is a main character and will be on there, and a few others. So I think it's just to introduce like who Michael's character is, what her relationship is with all the other characters, all the other main characters, and kind of go from there. Hmm. And they decided to show it instead of being like this event that's unseen.
The last point I want to make, a lot of people have been are upset about the whole fact that, you know, the show is going to be on CBS All Access. I believe it's $6 with commercials or $10 without commercials per month, which seems kind of annoying, especially if you're only watching this one show and you're paying, you know, X amount per month.
Yep.
I would like to point out, and I'm not telling you how to do this, but I'm just stating a fact. If you live outside the United States or Canada and you happen to have Netflix, you will get the show for free via Netflix every Monday.
Yep. Wow.
Now, the key to this statement, if you live outside the United States or if your internet comes through outside the United States,
basically,
you get Netflix.
Basically, if
VPN.
You are,
what?
If
oops,
you are outside
sorry.
The U.S., Robbie, if you are outside the U.S., then that means that your IP address would be seen by Netflix as being outside of the U.S. And if your IP address is seen as being outside of the U.S., then you would get it on, say, Monday on your Netflix account outside of the U.S. with your IP address outside of the U.S. So,
just saying. That's all we're saying. We're just saying.
But
isn't
thing,
that interesting?
The thing that gets me
for
is,
our international
again,
audience.
The, yes.
Yes, for our international
yes.
audience.
But I just feel like CBS has tried for so long to ignore the Hulu and Netflix and those kinds of things, at least especially like Hulu, and try to do their own thing, and it's shot them in the foot all so many times already. I don't. It's like they need to just give it up and embrace the fact that they are not going to have a viable individual streaming service for themselves. They just don't. They can't. I don't think they can carry it. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Sarah, what are your thoughts on Star Trek?
Oh, I liked it a lot. I think it's kind of stupid that people are upset with. Okay, like I could do without all the lens flariness or whatever. But I think one of the things, one of the reasons that people are confused about what timeline it falls into and blah 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 is because of the style of the show, of the filming of the show, and that's just stupid. Like that's nothing to do with, what do you want them to film it the way they filmed the original series?
Yes.
Like
I want 1960s
though,
LED lights.
They're pissed off about
I want the plastic prosthetics.
Like, oh no, it doesn't look like the original series. Okay, good.
Go watch the original series.
I can't handle that, honestly. It's like watching classic Doctor Who. I can't do it. And no, but you don't want to watch that either, and you know it. Like, well, fine, but you like we have the technology to make it a
look
better
cool.
show
right.
with better effects and just better production value all around. So if that's the reason people are like, I don't know what time period it is. Don't be stupid. It's whatever they say it is, which is from what I can tell, I think it's supposed to be the prime timeline.
Yeah.
The
prime.
Kirk timeline, the original series Kirk timeline, cool. not the split off, which is fine. And then also with the Klingons, Robbie, you were even helping me because I was like, why do the Klingons not look like they did in the original series?
So in the episode Trouble with Trebles
yes.
from Deep Space Nine, Sisko and the crew travel back
love
in time
Sisko.
To Kirk's time period to track down a time traveling Klingon.
Classic.
Weird, right?
Cool.
Anyway, Worf or some of the Worf is with them, and I believe Bashir, the medical officer, asks him, "Why do the Klingons look so weird, or why do they look so different?
They look like humans
during
basically.
Kirk's period, because obviously between Kirk's period's Klingons and what we see in Next Generation Klingons, they do look different.
Yeah,
pretty drastically different.
And Worf says there were certain factions or families that tried genetic mutations and modifications to look and appear different. And he even said that this was kind of the dark period for the Klingon Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And he was uncomfortable about it, and he didn't really want to talk about it. So
that's
it's
cool.
very possible that is kind of what we – maybe the answer to why these Klingons look so different.
Hmm. It's science fiction at the end of the day. You can explain it.
Yeah.
You can explain everything.
There
yeah.
you go.
Like, for example, the time – there's a TOS episode that actually takes place 10 years before the original show. So right in this time frame, and it's like a Spock-centric episode. And the Starfleet uniforms at those times are like sweater ponchos. So people were like, why are they wearing jumpsuits that are more akin to like Enterprise-esque times than these like jumpsuit polos? And they smartly explained it as Starfleet tried multiple designs, like multiple design ships at the same time with different uniforms at the same time concurrently. So you can it's not hard to explain.
Exactly. I mean, and you can even take it one step further to like our own to present day, to kind of what we see like with our military, for example. Yeah. Our military try consistently different armor, outfits, styles, etc.
Outfits.
Uniforms.
I like it. Apologies. I like outfits.
Costumes.
Or, you know, I mean, look at it.
Channeling
like,
our mother.
Football. Like, one team has several different, I mean, you've got your home and your away standard
and your
jerseys,
color
but then you've
rush
got,
in the NFL.
Exactly, and then you've got, sometimes they'll do throwbacks, and they're like, there's all kinds of stuff. So,
or your gross
that I have
jerseys
less of a problem with.
Oh, boy.
And those short shorts. Throwback short shorts. Hmm.
So, in conclusion, Star Trek Discovery?
I liked it.
Bobby, you liked it too.
I liked it a lot.
I know you have to be angsty, but you liked it.
I'm excited for it. I think it's been a long time. It's been over 10 years since we had a Star Trek TV show.
Hey, speaking about long time, isn't that the start to the Star Trek Enterprise theme song?
It's been a long time. No, it's a long road, right?
It's been a long road.
It's been a long road.
Whatever, it's
getting
long.
Getting from there to here.
And it's long to listen to that.
Yeah.
It's long.
It's that's a different time.
They need to bring back Scott.
Scotty?
Scott Bakula.
We have been watching quite a bit of Star Trek. We watched a lot of Enterprise this week and some Next Generation as well. So
in Japanese.
We watched Next Generation in Japanese, but we could only watch like a couple of episodes and we're like, all right, the novelty's worn off. We don't understand what is being said.
Nice.
We're going to ship this into English so that we can just enjoy ourselves. So.
There you go. There you go. Cool. So I think that wraps up Star Trek Discovery pretty in-depth. We'll obviously bring you more as we watch it. Comes out every Sunday?
Every Sunday.
So every Sunday. Perfect. Cool. Let's move on to The Deuce. Juno, actually, this you're the one who kind of told me about this, something about a 3-season plan, and perhaps that's why James Franco signed on?
Yeah, so the creators – so there was an in-depth interview with James Franco recently about The Deuce and why he's doing it and what interested him in it. And a couple years ago, he decided he wanted to foray into television. And he did his own show, which Christian and I watched on Hulu, 11/22/63.
We watched that one.
Oh, you guys watched that too?
Okay. Sure. Oh, yeah.
Cool. So yeah, that was like his show that he did on Hulu, and it was very well done. And he talked about how on TV you can tell a better story than you can on movies, and it's not like the old TV where you do like 22 episodes and like you're writing like all the way through like the season. It's very serialized. It's very like it's all written before you start filming. You film it and then you release it. It's like one big story, and he was attracted to The Deuce because the creators had a 3-season plan that's very specific, that takes place in 3 different time periods. I think like season 1 is like the span of a year, and then season 2 is like the span of the very next year, and then season 3 is like 10 years later from the end of season 2 to talk about the rise and fall of the pornography industry in New York. And so he said he was very drawn to that. And that's why he signed on. So I thought that was cool, and that was revealing with the show itself, because they clearly have a full plan, and they know exactly where they're going, and they know what to do, and that's kind of cool to me at least.
Yeah, and I think in that same interview he mentioned how they want to cover. He said it's going to be ambitious, but they want to cover how like the political ramifications. So they want to. I think in the 80s something with the mayor got involved, and so they want to cover that. So it's pretty cool that they've sort of framed the historical situation into this show. I'm excited as well.
Yeah, and this episode from last Sunday was, again, we're getting closer and closer to the beginning of the porn industry for these main characters. Mm. And you saw some of more of that political connection with some of the James Franco's character opened a bar and he works for this mobster who is connected with a politician. And there was a scene where they're at a lawyer's office and he's like, put a dollar in my pocket because now I'm your lawyer type of thing. And the lawyer is covering for them and the politician to kind of clean up the deuce area of New York. And then the police officers heard shortly after that they couldn't make arrests in these certain areas that they're trying to build up. Mm-hmm. So they're clearly using these areas to move something.
Yeah, do crimes. Just, you know.
To do crimes.
They're moving library books.
Yes. Overdue library books.
It's a book bus.
Time to go mobile. Yes, yes. Nobody reads in the 70s. No. So, yeah.
Except one of the main characters.
They couldn't read in the 70s.
Well, she's the only one.
Yet.
Yes, yes. Books were outdated when you have adult movies that you could watch.
All right.
So that's the deuce. We'll be bringing you more on that, too, as that comes out every Sunday
as well.
Everything's coming out Sunday, you know. And since Game of Thrones is done, there's a huge vacuum, a power vacuum, if you will. I'm just kidding. There isn't. But it's pretty cool. There's a lot of good shows coming out, so that's exciting for us. Moving on. We are Luzo Productions, and we do things outside of this here Luzo cast. Another podcast that me and Arjun specifically are involved in is The Lateral, which is our sports-centric podcast from the viewpoint of two biased, kind of sometimes knowledgeable New England fans. And,
I don't know if we're knowledgeable.
Knowledgeable is a strong word.
You seem really positive and sure about all of that.
Yes, it's sports. Those sports balls is what that podcast is all about. And so we're just going to bring you a quick bit of news, what we call the lateral quick hit. MVP point guard Russell Westbrook just signed the largest contract in NBA history. It is a 5-year extension, and it is worth, I believe, $233 million total.
The extension itself is worth $205 million, so it's not the largest extension. But with his current $28 million he's making this year, that brings it up to $233 million, which is the largest single contract for any player in NBA history. It's big because Oklahoma City did not know if he would be coming back after this year. They brought in both Paul George and Carmelo Anthony recently to kind of bolster those chances. Westbrook has decided he's staying. Now he's going to try and convince those two to stay as well. And the icing on the cake is he signed it on the day of Kevin Durant's birthday.
Yes, and if you know anything...
Wait, why is that the icing on the cake?
Kevin Durant also used to play at Oklahoma City and then spurned Oklahoma and went to Golden State to win a championship. Him and Russ were considered...
Kevin Durant?
Kevin Durant, yeah.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Kevin Hart.
What?
That's what I heard.
Well, that is, first of all,
why is that a big deal?
Kevin Hart is like 5'4", and Kevin Durant is 7 feet. So
he's like two of him.
Yeah.
Durant's not 7 foot, is he?
Who? Kevin Durant. So he's listed at 6'9", which is the height that he might have been when he came to the league. He had a growth spurt, and they never changed his height after that.
Classic.
He's definitely 7 feet, though. You put him next to Greg Monroe, they're like the same height. The other reason that it's big is that it might be the first time a small market team has ever secured an MVP type of player to a long-term deal. It's really social media, you know, the way the sports are conducted these days, it totally gives leverage to these small market teams. Players no longer feel like they have to go to the New York Knicks or the Miami Heat or the Los Angeles Lakers to build their brand. They can really do that from anywhere in the country now. And so this is sort of perhaps the culmination of where we're at today, where you can go to a small market team and still build your brand.
It's a big game changer.
The power of the internet. So I think it's great. Russell has committed to Oklahoma City. He's pretty much putting himself out there as being the anti-Kevin Durant. Everyone, you know, looked at Kevin Durant as kind of a snake, kind of betrayed his team, shows no loyalty, goes to the defending champions to make them even better, make it the greatest team ever put on paper, and Russell Westbrook has proven to be the exact opposite of that. He's like, nope, I'm going to stay with the team that drafted me. I'm going to try and make them better, and I'm going to try and come and beat you, even if we're the underdogs every single year. So pretty interesting. And at this point, Oklahoma City, considered by many, if not all, to be perhaps the biggest threats to Golden State out of the West. I personally think it's still got to be Houston. The Houston Rockets, who have combined Chris Paul with James Harden. To me, that's the team I think is a little bit deeper. And I think they might still be the cream of the crop after Golden State.
I think the Nets are taking it all the way this year.
The Nets?
No, that's a joke. But Christian and I will have a lot more on Monday night's recording of The Lateral. That will be available Monday night, Tuesday morning, and it'll be great. It'll be fantastic.
It'll be bigly good.
Bigly wrong.
No, not wrong. Good.
No, there'll be a lot of fake news in there.
Fake, God. So let's switch gears a little bit. We just talked about sports for a second. Let's switch it over to video games. So we've been playing, all of us actually, various amounts of time, various depths.
Some of us have repeated the same mission multiple times.
Achuna! Oh my God! You don't even need. Well, I guess if you're playing with other people,
no,
it makes sense.
I was calling out Sarah because of her internet connection.
Because my internet connection sucks so bad. Sarah. I just kept killing it and. Well, that's okay. When I get back from Japan, I will actually be able to play it.
Maybe
for the last time.
Oh,
maybe for the last time.
Hopefully.
I will not lose hope.
If you haven't figured it out, we're talking about the game Destiny. And I think as of 2 weeks ago, Destiny rolled out the much-anticipated, sort of the whole point of playing the game, what they call raids, which are basically... almost impossible missions where you need to team up with the strongest players in the game to try and beat them. One of our very own hit the minimum power score to play a raid, and so he did with five other brave souls. So Arjuna, tell us about the raids, what happened, your thoughts, and did you survive, did you win, or did you bring your entire team down?
Yes.
I'm going with the last one. He brought his entire team down.
So I'll start with this. If you are 260 and you try a raid, do not try to 260.
Yes.
Wrong.
That's amazing.
Off. Because the raids really are that you've got to be the creme.
The creme de la creme.
Exactly.
The creme de la creme.
You've got to be the top of the
French?
Top. You really should. I mean, you need to have gone through the entire game, probably done almost all your side stuff. Your power level's got to be really high.
What would you recommend?
270 at least. Honestly.
At least 270, okay.
And then it's not even about your power level. It's about building the right team. Mm. You can't go in under six. You've got to have the full squad.
So six is the maximum?
Six players? Six is the maximum, and... Some of the challenges you can do with like four, and there's some with five. Just go in with six because you need those extra bodies, even if it's not like required for the task within the actual mission part. But
so
you still need
what you're saying is I should never ever try to raid ever.
You can, but
it's okay. You won't hurt my feelings.
Not unless you're planning to like sink in at least 20 hours before you start the raid. Then no.
You need to get to 270. Sorry, your power level probably right now is four. So
you've all played with me, and I won't be offended when you're honest, which is to say that I should probably never ever attempt to raid ever.
Right. It would be so.
It's
and
okay.
Then the other thing with raids is you just have to have people that are patient, and you've got to have a lot of time on your hands. A lot.
How long did it take you?
All right. So I started around. it took me. Close to 5 hours.
5 hours to beat a raid?
I did not beat the raid.
Wait, you lost?
Jeez.
So it's not even about losing. So the raid is you go at least in the Destiny raid, you go to this giant ship castle thing called the Leviathan. Mm-hmm. You start out on the outside and you fight your way in with some really powerful enemies. But if there's six of you, it should be pretty easy. And then you have three different trials that you have to go through. In 5 hours, we beat one, and we started another one and got about halfway through the other
one. So is it because you kept dying?
Wow.
Yeah. So the team I played with, it was the first time we were all doing it. You can look it up to learn how to do it, but they wanted to figure out how to do it yourself. Yep. And there's not – and for those who have played Destiny, like the missions are easy because it's like shoot and kill and you win. That is not the raids. Like, you definitely, there's obviously a lot of
shooting.
Was it
like a puzzle game?
There's a lot of puzzle elements. There's a lot of, like, you've got to kill enemies in a certain order. You've got to carry, things in a certain order and do X, Y, and Z. The first, if you guys don't care with me spoiling the raid a little bit, The first one that we did
Oh, Ravi apparently wants to figure out the raid.
Unless you have 10 hours on your hands.
Yeah.
The first part is you come to this like throne room type of thing. And there are four platforms that four of your players have to stand on to start it. Enemies come out, and then like a centurion comes out. Once you kill most of the centurions, two orbs appear on opposite ends.
Great.
So you need this one. You really need six for this first one, because then two people need to grab the orbs, and then they're teleported on the inside and on the outside, I guess.
Oh my god!
On the inside, you can see them going around this area, but on each platform, there are three arrows that you can shoot to open up a wall for them to keep running around with this ball of energy.
Oh my god.
So then the people running have to basically tell the people on the platform of the three rows to shoot which ones are safe to shoot. So like there's a top, a middle, and a bottom. And then you have to tell them like top, bottom. Here's the next kicker though. The same person can't shoot the two. It has to be two different people shooting it, and they have to be standing on the platform before they can go through. You have a limited amount of time to go through before you blow up, because every time you go through and you get a green, you run through a charge that doesn't make you blow up. And then you come, once you get all the way around once, so of these four platforms, you get transported back into the inner circle and you run it to the middle. And you have to do that six times or three times with both people doing it, essentially. Then once you've done that, everyone is transported to the outer circle and has to do the race around and try and get through.
I'm exhausted.
It is exhausting.
Seriously. I haven't even played this.
And it's like it's such a minor detail. Oh, the other thing too, when the two people are running on the outside circle, I was one of the runners on the outside circle. So I'm just running around and they're like symbols. So I'm like cup, top, bottom. And then like they shoot. Once you do that, these shades come out that the people in the inner circle have to kill in a certain amount of time, or everyone blows up and dies. And you have to, they have to keep moving on the platform with you and both stand on it and then shoot it at the same time, the two different people. So it's a lot of
talking.
A lot of talking.
So everyone really needs
you can't do this without a headset. You cannot do this without communication.
Wow.
Everyone's got to have a headset. Everyone's got to be comfortable enough with each other to like make sure everything works. You've got to work together. You've got to have a system to get it done.
Did you know everyone on your team?
Yeah, I was actually the unifying person on my team that knew everyone. It was a lot of my friends from back home in New Hampshire that I went to college with, and then it was my coworker at work.
Can you just give us the names?
Won't
mind. Yeah, I just want to know who
it was.
They were.
Robbie.
Yeah.
Kendrick.
Yeah.
Nick.
Yeah.
Tyler and Matt Davis.
Wow, that's impressive. I feel like I know four or five of them. And
I was gonna say I honestly feel like I know
you. I think you do.
So Arjuna, real quick.
So weird.
It was fun. I will say this: it was fun, and it was tough because that one took us a long time because it was a lot of trial and error.
If you make one mistake on that,
you have to start again. So like we would get through runs. Like the first
I know how that feels.
The first time, right? The first time we got all six back into the middle, and then we're all in the outside circle. None of us know what the hell we're doing.
Yeah,
and we're like running through, and Matt and I, who were the runners in the original, get to the end first because we're familiar with the cycle. And then originally there was like an orb, and you would jump into it, and you transport. So there are like four orbs at the end. So we like jump onto them. We don't teleport. Like we don't know what to do. And then like we run over the others, which you're not supposed to do, because then you're picking them up, and then everyone else dies. You're supposed to do at the end. You're supposed to run all the way through the finish line, which you weren't supposed to do the original time.
Oh my god!
To then be transported and then get it to the middle.
Destiny, I don't even know what to think.
And then here's the other thing, Robbie.
there's more.
So there are two other trials. We tried another one, which was a little bit easier. The problem for me there was I was too low of a level,
yeah.
And it's one where you have to like at certain points stand kind of still, mm-hmm. And as a hunter that doesn't really suit my class
not
very
at all.
Well.
Yeah.
So we actually made the mistake of we had six, but we had there were like two sides essentially, and we had two hunters on one side, which you probably needed a Titan, a Warlock, and a Hunter on each side.
Gotcha.
And then probably wanted like a Titan and a Warlock standing in place, and then the Hunter kind of aiding and switching off when needed.
Interesting.
That one was a little easier, but what we've been reading is the third trial, which we didn't even get to, was the hardest and more complicated one. So the one we did that was really complicated is like a medium complication.
Oh, great.
Ooh.
Quick question. On your team, what was the breakdown of the classes?
We had two Titans, two Warlocks, and two Hunters.
Well, that's perfect.
And then everyone was at or around 280 except me. I was easily the weakest at 261. Mm. When we originally...
And you were the leader of this ragtag band.
I was not the leader.
I was the unifying voice
of that, but Tyler took on more of the leadership role.
Oh, okay.
In terms of delegating, because I think he was the most powerful and just kind of took on that role. But originally when we started that one with the inner and outer circle, I was on one of the pillars, and I stayed and I wasn't running. But we kept finding out, because I was such a low level, I kept dying on my pillar. And so someone had to come and aid me, while when you're running... You fight at the beginning, but then you're obviously running and you don't have to fight enemies. So it kind of worked for me to do that. And it also works as a hunter. You're the most agile character.
Yeah, you're mobile.
To do the runs. Oh, another thing complicating raids. When you die, so let's say all four of us are playing a raid. So let's say I die. Krishna then revives me. I die again. In that one raid, like in one of those sections, you can't revive me again. Someone else has to revive me.
Oh,
so that means like Ravi would have to revive me, and then Sarah would have to revive me. Then
especially
if I died,
if you're not near them,
exactly. Then if you're dead for more than 30 seconds, everyone dies.
Oh, great.
All right, so I'm not playing raids.
I would be the worst person to play in the first place. So.
It sounds like for raids, be level 300.
Get as high as possible, and then just go in with a team that you trust and knows what they're doing.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I mean, that's very interesting. It sounds like the ultimate team-up extravaganza of all time.
But we had a lot of fun. We actually have like a text chain group going now. We're trying to coordinate our next time to try the rest of the raid.
There you go.
Because the rewards are ridiculous. I will say it. So in the game, you have 10 slots to hold engrams. I came out of that with 10, and then in my like packages on like the different worlds, outer worlds, I had like 3 more. So I got 13 engrams just doing a third of the of the thing, and then I went from power level 261 to 269.
Nice.
And then once you get to power level 260, it's very tough to go from 260 to 280. It's a very slow grind because. Yep. You can only get more powerful equipment from engrams. You can't get it from anywhere else, essentially.
Like weapon drops and stuff?
Right. Okay. So you can't buy anything really higher than 260. It's all got to be from engrams.
Well, there you go. That is Destiny Raids. Two more things real quick. We're just going to sprint through these. Real Science Roundup. I'm going to turn it over to Ravi because this is kind of his news right here. Elon Musk. What does Elon Musk have here for us?
So first, there's the big aeronautical convention where all the various space agencies, government and private, kind of come together. It's in Australia this year. It kicked off, I believe, today it actually kicks off.
Mm.
Yesterday, because we're in the future. Sorry. Anyway.
I thought it was legitimately, whatever.
Before the convention actually kind of kicked off, Elon Musk presented a SpaceX new initiative, which is to actually use the next generation of reusable rockets to actually have people fly from one part of the world to another part by going up into space, going very, very fast in a rocket, and then landing. Richard Branson was doing with Virgin Galactic, or the idea behind Virgin Galactic, which is kind of using rockets and getting people from one location to another quickly.
So just a quick question. There was like a video that came out a few months ago of the reusable Elon Musk rockets where they like landed them successfully again. Are those the rockets, the reusable ones you're talking about?
So yes, it would be the next generation of those rockets.
Gotcha.
So it would still be using reusable rockets. They actually showed a video, a 3D rendering video of what it would look like. And in the example, they used they had passengers leaving New York City for a 7 a.m. flight. So they were getting on a boat that rushed them out to a water dock out to sea, or out in one of the lakes or whatever near New York City, blasting off, the fuselage or the main rocket kind of actually coming back down to Earth, and then the actual shuttle, which has all the people heading over to Shanghai. The total flight time was only 23 minutes, and then landing on a ocean barrage out to sea from Shanghai as well. So the idea behind it is you could get from anywhere, from any major city on the Earth, under an hour.
Yeah. Wow, so I can work in Japan and live in Los Angeles.
Well, they let's say they roll it out like next week. You still have the problem of governments kind of have to figure out, well, how does, you know, immigration and customs work with something like this?
Yeah, security and stuff.
You have to have the infrastructure kind of built in place. Mm. And then not only that, but the first generation of this is going to be probably insanely expensive.
And dangerous.
It sounds like it's building more jobs to me, helping the economy.
Well, no.
Well, you're right there, yeah, because it's an entire new industry.
Exactly. Get rid of cars.
But
it's
going to
ruin like eight other industries.
In order for this to work, it can't just be Elon Musk and SpaceX pushing it. Other companies, governments have to kind of get on board with it. Mm. But it's kind of cool to kind of see, because this isn't the first time we've heard of this idea of sending rockets and using rockets and going into the low orbit atmosphere to get from one point on Earth to another quickly. Like I said, Richard Branson, Virgin Galactic, that was the entire idea behind that. But due to funding issues, a couple of accidents that happened.
And the lack of technology to an extent, that wasn't
kind of
there
in limbo
yet.
Right now.
I want to know, like, yeah, I'm interested to see the first government that gets behind this.
Japan.
Maybe.
I would think China, honestly.
China, yeah, that kind of makes sense, yeah. Actually, I would love to see like the environmental impact, like, you know, what that does to, you know, because I know Elon Musk is pretty environmentally, you know, conscientious, like with SolarCity and, you know, trying to Tesla, obviously. So, you know, I'd be curious to see the environmental impact and how he, you know, minimizes it, or, you know, how he addresses, you know, that issue. Because I imagine that the emissions from that would be interesting to look at.
Also, what it does to your body. I mean, we know even going that high up, I mean, astronauts train for extensive amount of times even to go into that area. What, like, just an everyday person kind of doing that type of travel?
Like every single day?
Yeah, if you did it a lot. Or not even every single day, but let's say you did it a couple times a year, or, you know, a few times a
I feel like it would be fine, because, you know, in theory, it sounds like you'd only spend very – it would be so fast, right? It shouldn't really affect anything, but you're right. It would be an interesting long-term study.
Adjustment, too, yeah. I would imagine. Like,
yeah,
a little biology.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, very cool. Very cool. Probably not going to happen for another – who wants to – let's make an over-under. I'm going to say 30 years.
Oh, I say 15.
15? Cool.
20.
Okay. Juna?
69.
Excellent. I love it. That's the best one by far. Even though it's probably wrong.
That would be impressive.
It's pretty wrong. Yeah, but
– I'm going to say by the time all of us are within our hundreds –
200s maybe?
200s. 100 to 200 year age.
Fair.
Because, you know, we're going to obviously
– fair.
You know, by then,
we could be brains
forever.
In jars and stuff, or, you know, be a cyborg,
you know,
body.
We could already be brains in jars.
Jazz.
Oh, we're brains in jars now.
Jazz.
We're brains in jazz
now.
We're
brains
in
jazz with
that
coffee.
Oh, is this like a simulation?
Yeah.
Let's not go there.
Oh, wait, actually, to bring this back, because Stronger does take place in Boston. The Boston accents are pretty funny in the movie. I will say that. And, like, the Boston people.
Oh, God.
And, like, what they say. Because, like, the main character is, like, a huge Red Sox fan, too.
Oh,
so
God.
It's like, I gotta watch the Red Sox, bitch. Gotta watch the Sox.
He's a Sox fan.
Wait, Jake Gyllenhaal?
You gotta watch the Sox. Yeah.
Shut up, Jake.
Yeah.
Sorry. Last thing, a little bit of Nerdyverse news. Red Dead 2. Not Red Dead Redemption. Red Dead 2, which is the sequel to
Red Dead Redemption
2.
It's not called Red Dead 2. I just put it there.
Oh, I see. Well,
it's
fine.
Red Dead Redemption 2.
You are messing everything up, sir. No, I'm just kidding. New trailer dropped. It's supposed to come out tentatively, I would think, spring of 2018, which means 2020.
End of 2018 for Rockstar. It was supposed to come out this summer, and it was delayed a year. And Rockstar, I think Grand Theft Auto 4 was delayed by like 2 years by the end of it. Rockstar...
They're notorious for delaying stuff.
But I'm totally fine with it because I've never played a Rockstar game I've disliked. In fact, I've loved every single one. They're my favorite video game company, and I am very excited for this.
Yeah, the trailer looks beautiful. It doesn't really.
It actually reveals some details. It is a prequel to Red Dead 1. You are part of Dutch's gang. So if you're familiar with the main story, Dutch was the gang that John Marston, the character, the main protagonist from Red Dead Redemption 1, used to roll with, and then it is part of the plot. Mm. Spoiler alert for those who haven't ever finished Red Dead Redemption: John Marston dies at the end. That's the ultimate. He ultimately gets gunned down by the U.S. Marshals. But because this is a prequel and it's about Dutch's gang, and you're a big part of it. You're a different character. I forget what his name is, but you're a part of that gang. It hasn't been confirmed yet, but it's highly speculated you'll run into John Marston and a lot of characters from Red Dead 1. And they're just kind of building this like Western universe that's kind of like Grand Theft Auto, where every Grand Theft Auto game has connections that are pretty wide. Like in Grand Theft Auto 5, the first time you meet Trevor's character, he kills Johnny, who is a big character in Grand Theft Auto 4 and like actually playable in one of the DLCs. Mm. So just kind of like building this nice connection.
Cool.
This universe.
Yeah, we will see.
Wait, so do you need to have played Red Dead Redemption?
No, it's just like the Grand Theft Autos, right? Like they're sequels.
Oh, so you can, but you don't have to.
But right. You don't have to. Like it enriches the experience, but you can pick up a.
It's not important.
You can pick it up and enjoy it.
Yeah.
So
cool.
And because Red Dead 1 was like the tail end of the cowboy era, and this is 10 years. This is 10 years before. This is more the Western time.
Ooh, maybe I like this one.
It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I never could get into the first one.
I loved the first. I put a lot of hours into that game.
You did.
To be fair, I think I never actually owned it. I think we borrowed it from you and played it some, and probably. I just kind of was like, maybe I'll try it again.
Yeah.
I hunted all the animal skins.
Oh, my God.
Of course you did.
You completed all the hunted challenges.
Wait, did you then buy, like, could you buy clothes in that one? Or
you could, right?
You could, yeah. And you bought it. It was limited, but I did.
Did you?
I did buy all of that.
Of course you did.
And I bought all the guns,
I just needed to know.
There was a hunting challenge in the first one where you had to find, like, there are only 13 buffalo actually, rendered in the whole game. And they actually, like, they weren't, like, cloned or anything. There were only 13 total. And if you killed them all, you got a trophy called, like, Last of the Buffalo. So, like,
you destroyed the buffalo?
I killed the buffalo.
You are a horrible human. Wow. Yeah. And on that note,
I wanted the trophy.
Mr. Vegetarian.
Did it for the trophy, guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Just so our viewers know, Adrian is a vegetarian, but he enjoyed killing all 13.
I'm a pescatarian.
The last
Get
of
it
the buffalo.
Right.
Yeah, same thing.
Regardless.
Same thing.
A buffalo is not a fish, so.
Buffalo soldier.
I was a vegan last week for 5 days, and it was terrible. I hated it.
That's surprising, considering
that's a whole different thing.
Well, anyways, on that note, the last note that Juno is a virtual murderer of the buffalo. That is the episode.
I did it once, and I'll do it again.
You will. I'm sure you will. That is episode 64 of the LuzoCast. Thank you so much for joining us. As always, please check us out at our website, www.luzoproductions.com. We're also on the social medias, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. Just search at Luzo Productions. You will find it.
Oh, and for those – I've actually heard this question a few times. How to spell Luzo? L-U-Z-O. Luzo.
Z as in zebra.
L as in Luzo. U as in Uso. Z as in Zo. O as in O.
Whoa, that is so helpful.
All right, thanks. For
wow,
that came out of your nose.
A booger just fell out.
That was gigantic. Christian rubbed his nose, and the biggest booger I've ever seen in my life.
The biggest.
I'm really glad I'm not there right now. Out of his nose. Really, really glad I'm not there.
Oh my God, end it. End
it's really
show.
Dry.
Put the music. Cut some music. We're done. We're done.
Guys, thank you so much for putting up with us.
Getting from there to here.
We will see you next Sunday.
It's been a long time.
Stop.
Get out now while you still can. Bye bye.
Bye.